Welcome to another episode of GT Radio, and tonight we have an outstanding guest. She is part of our series of the Wonder Women of Gaming, and let's say hello to Lisa Miles. How are you, Lisa?
I'm great, thank you. I have to tell you, Tino, I'm very excited to be on air with you today, and especially as part of this series.
Great, thank you so much, and we're very grateful to have you. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and your environment and, you know, some of the things that your parents instilled in you.
Sure. So I grew up in a very small town of about 15,000 people called Lincoln, Illinois. It happens to be the only town named after Abraham, I believe, from when before he was president. He used to practice law in our little town. And I really actually started out in high school wanting to be a high school algebra teacher, and I'd end up teaching in Lincoln, Illinois after college. But when I went to college, the sort of a wow thing happened, and I just realized that there was a lot of world out there besides Lincoln. And so that was just a great opportunity for me to meet a lot of people. I ended up in the Chicago area after doing an internship in college. And but growing up, my mom and dad really taught me a very strong work ethic. So my dad was a carpenter, and he kind of actually went out on his own after about 10 years. And, you know, people would use him because he had such a great reputation for building quality work, but it would take a year to get the house built because he didn't have a huge crew. It was basically him. So,
and you built the house you grew up in too, right?
He did. So when I was about 12 or 13, my mom and dad had saved all of their money and had been putting cash away. They didn't have credit cards at all growing up, and saved enough money to build the house, so they didn't have a mortgage or any credit growing up, which kind of became a challenge when it was time to go to college because they couldn't get any parent loans or anything to help out because of no credit.
Right. Got it. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, they didn't believe in, they saved their money, no credit cards, no mortgage, nothing like that, right?
Exactly. Yep, it was all cash, and if they didn't have the cash, then they determined they couldn't afford it and didn't buy it.
And they had a lot of friends, a lot of people dropping, like they were very social people, right?
Yes. You know, Lincoln is a very small community, and so friendships and people, you know, that are friends are more like family, to be honest. I grew up in a neighborhood where many of the kids were my same age, so we played baseball and rode bikes and, you know, did all of that, had neighborhood fish fries, and just a very close-knit group in town. And then my dad had a lot of friends that he met through the houses that he built, and you know, then the wives and the husbands get together. And so he was very well liked, well known, as was my mom, and very, very tight knit community.
What did you study in school? Did you ever think you would, like, get into the casino business after? What did you start in at?
Yeah, so the casino was never on my mind because Illinois at the time didn't even have any casinos or gaming back then. But I really loved numbers, and I kind of thought growing up, both in grade school and then when I went to high school, that I really wanted to be a high school algebra teacher. So I started out at Illinois State University with that in mind, and I think it was about my third year, the beginning of my third year, one of my classes had me sitting in and monitoring a high school algebra class. And I was just sitting in the back of the room, and that particular teacher did not have control of the children in the class whatsoever. And I walked out of there just thinking, I don't think that I can do this for the rest of my life, so I need to come up with something else. And I always liked numbers, and I had taken a bookkeeping class in high school that I really enjoyed, and it came easy for me. So it was my beginning of my junior year that I changed my major to from algebra to accounting. And then that's kind of what led me into public accounting, and actually ultimately what got me to gaming.
Right, because you then went into an internship at Arthur Young. Tell us a little bit about how that happened, and then, you know, you how you were placed on the Valley's account. Tell us a little bit about how that whole thing happened.
Yeah, it was actually a lot of fun. One of the things that Illinois State University had was for your senior, your fourth year, that you could do an internship. And back then there were Big Eight accounting firms. So I was really fortunate. I got my first choice when I went in and interviewed, which was Arthur Young. I liked it. They seemed a little more down to earth and kind of reminded me of a culture more like home. And so started with them, and it was a 3-month internship, and it was right in like January, February, and March, so what's typically a busy season for external auditors. And I was placed on the Bally account because I was working out of the Chicago office, and Bally Entertainment's corporate offices were in Chicago. So I actually was partly on the, back in that day, Bally's actually manufactured slot machines in Illinois. And so I was on that particular audit where they actually manufactured the machines. And then I was also at the corporate offices to kind of look at some of the consolidation. And so it was really exciting. I had a partner that ended up becoming a very important mentor of mine. And he really took me under his wing because he started out as a intern on the Bally account, and then 9-10 years later, he was actually a partner on the account. So he kind of took a little special interest in making sure that all went well for me and my career there.
Talk to me a little bit about, before we go into the whole casino thing and everything, now that you mentioned mentorship, talk to me a little bit about, you know, mentorship and what it means and what it meant to you, and what are the kind of things that you were taught and nurtured on?
You know, I think part of it was instilled, I think, from growing up with my parents and that work ethic. But I joke a lot about that first year and when I was with Arthur Young. So we were called FIPs, first year people. And the one thing I laughed about, you know, that first year in public accounting, often what you're doing is making photocopies and doing some mundane tasks a lot, you know, vouching to checks and things like that. And I always had the attitude that, you know, if I'm going to have to make copies, I'm going to make the best copies that I can, make sure that the printer doesn't, you know, fade, that there aren't half copies because it didn't feed through the copier. Just wanted to make sure that I always did the best job that I could. And I think the partner also noticed that. And so he just took extra time and made sure that he explained things to me, because I think you learn a lot faster if you understand the whys as opposed to just being told what to do. And he was really patient with me in being able to ask any questions. And it just really grew into a nice friendship back then. And I ended up working on other jobs for him besides just the Bally account.
What do you think that he saw in you that wanted him to invest the time in you?
I would have to say that I really think he saw that I was always going to give my absolute best, and that not doing so wasn't good enough for me, and just really always wanting to be, you know, that outstanding person, because it's important for me, and not because anybody's pushing me, but just because I want to be the best that I can be.
Tell us a little bit about the Bally's internship, you know, the Arthur Young, and then how that correlated to Bally's, and then how you got your first casino job and what happened then.
Yeah, so I was with Arthur Young for about 5 years, and each of those years I was on the Bally account. So I got to be involved with some of the financial reporting and the, you know, kind of reviewing and auditing the 10-Ks and the 10-Qs and the annual report. I also was able to work with other offices that actually audited the casinos to share information. And it was just a great experience, not to mention public accounting is something, if anybody's going into accounting degree, I highly recommend the public accounting field, because you get a chance to learn different industries, you get a chance to work with different types of people, You learn different leaderships because one supervisor running one audit may be different from another individual. So it really helps build, I guess, a good business etiquette and kind of teach you a lot with people skills. And so that was really great. And then because I spent so much time on my Bally account and the partner that I worked for ended up becoming the chief financial officer for Bally Entertainment, then people started migrating to go work for Bally's, and I was one of them. So I left public accounting and worked for the company itself from 92 to 96. And there I did a lot of the consolidation. So I had a lot of hands-on and over-the-phone conversations with pulling together each of the company's reporting packages for the 10-Qs and the 10-Ks. So I had, you know, regular conversations with the controllers of Bally's in Atlantic City and Bally's in Vegas. And at the time, Bally's also owned Life Fitness clubs as well as manufactured the Life Fitness equipment. So there was a manufacturing component. They also owned at the time Scientific Games that was manufactured lottery equipment. And like I said, the gaming where they manufactured the slot machines. So there was a lot of different industries even within that, which was a lot of fun. And there was even at the time they had a German subsidiary, so there was some of that foreign transaction too. So it was a really great opportunity. And the one thing that I found kind of going along with always wanting to be the best that I can be, I loved my job. I was treated very well, but the corporate offices were very small, and there wasn't really a lot of opportunity for growth. So one day I went into his office and just said, hey, you know, I'm willing to relocate if that was what it would take in order for me to find some additional growth. And didn't hear anything for a year, and it was a year later that he called me into his office and said, what do you think about Washington State? And at the time, we didn't have any subsidiaries there at all. And so I thought he was crazy. But he then went on to explain that Bally's Las Vegas had invested in the management company for the Lucky Eagle Casino and Hotel in Rochester, Washington. And they were looking for a chief financial officer. And at the time, Bally's was in the project of building the Paris and on the Strip.
Right.
And he said, why don't you go out there and get some operational experience, and then perhaps we could move you into Paris when it opens. So that was kind of my career path when I came out here to Western Washington was that. And they were great. They sent me to Las Vegas for 3 weeks before I actually moved out here so I could see the behind-the-scenes operation of Las Vegas Casino. It was great. It really was. I mean, I got to go into the surveillance rooms. I got to meet with accounting personnel. It was a lot of fun. And kind of that's when gaming got in my blood. And it was April of 96 that I moved out here.
You got the bug. Tell me a little bit. You started in business. Yeah, you did. And it gets everybody once you experience it. You started in business fairly early in. Most of the women that started early were the only women in the room. How was that experience for you?
You know, it's funny. Kind of starting out, I didn't really pay attention, you know, male versus female. I just kind of saw everybody as my coworkers. But I would say as I moved up, it just became a little bit more evident, and namely only from the standpoint that the room just had many more males than females or other ethnic backgrounds. So it's just something that I never really perceived as being an issue, but you did notice it just because of the just sheer numbers.
And what helped you navigate it through the male-dominated business, and how did you function in terms of was that an issue for you? Was it, you know, what were some of the things that you had to overcome?
Yeah, so I never felt that I wasn't welcome at the table, and I think that a lot of that was because I had really earned respect with my knowledge. The background that I had coming up through the ballet ranks and through public accounting, I think really gave me an edge in being able to do the role as CFO here. And then the other thing I think that helped was when I started at the Lucky Eagle, there was about 300 employees, and today we have close to 700. So a lot of the way I grew with the company, so as it got larger, I was kind of one of, you know, it opened in 95, so I started in April 96 initially. And so I was, you know, one of the first people from the beginning. So also that history that I have, there's not very many other people here that have that same history of the casino itself.
Got it. Now, what would be some of the things you would tell women coming up in the business, the younger generation?
Yeah, I think what I would say, especially as you're moving up, that it kind of gets lonely at the top. I mean, you know, I never really understood that phrase until I actually experienced it. I find that people can be a lot more critical sometimes of women, and so I've had to learn to develop thick skin and to just sort of handle the stereotype of women being emotional. I think that's probably one of the largest challenges for me was just, you know, to be seen as, if you're firm, that you're not being, you know, bitchy, for lack of a word. And just really dealing with that and not letting it bother me. And I think that as you move up, and I'm not sure this is really only for women, but I think as you move up, people are more critical and, you know, looking at things that you're doing wrong versus what you're doing right, and just not letting that bother you or take you off your course.
So you had said something in this last response, which I kind of thought about a little bit, but you were saying not to be emotional because, you know, women are known to be emotional. Is that what you're saying? Like having a thicker skin when you get a snide comment or?
Yeah, I think that there's a stereotype that women manage too much maybe with feelings, and therefore the emotional kind of gets attached to it. There was a situation once where a male, and he was kind of seen to be a little aggressive as far, but in a positive way, right? Because he was just over anxious or whatever. But when it's a female, sometimes just because of stereotypes, it can be viewed as nagging or, you know, not viewed in a positive way. And I think that navigating that, is just where part of the challenge comes in.
So if I'm hearing this right, what you're saying is if a man and a woman walk through the door and they act the same way, it's perceived differently.
I believe that it oftentimes can be.
Yeah. Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. And then it just on the receiving end in terms of, you know, managing whatever comes at you, just try to be even keel, right? Don't.
Yes.
Don't make a big deal about it.
Yep, remain calm, listen to all the facts, let other people do the talking so you're kind of absorbing what's being said and just, you know, maintain some calmness and listen. That's one of the other skills that I've really had to work on.
And the other thing you had told me, and I can't remember if this was the last time we spoke, or you had said that you have to bring something to the table to get credibility. Like you were saying, you had knowledge that was valuable to them, and it really didn't matter if it was a man or a woman. That knowledge was valuable. They needed you.
Absolutely. That's correct.
Right? So in a sense, you're earning the respect.
Yep. I think anybody going in, you know, it's kind of looking at that attitude of how can I help this organization be better, you know, and finding that niche that you can do that, whatever the skill is, and you'll get noticed, I think.
What does it take to get to the level that you have achieved?
You know, so for me, I think I wouldn't really necessarily want somebody to take my way that I did it, because I've really spent too much time at work, and work has sort of become my family. And I think part of that was moving out from the Midwest to the West Coast, not knowing anybody. You know, Lucky Eagle did sort of become my family. But I think now what I've learned as I've moved up and achieved it is that it's really important to find that work life balance and really to set boundaries for yourself, and that it's important to take care of you, because that's the way that you'll be the best that you can be in the general manager, CEO, CFO, whatever that job is.
Right. I see what you're saying. And do you feel that the way that you came up in the era that you came up in is the same key ingredients that you need now to come up, or have things changed a little bit since back then?
You know, I think a lot of the values are the same as far as success. I think that a person has to have grit. They have to not give up. I think those qualities are kind of the same. I do think that what I'm finding in today's world is that, you know, there are different generations. I mean, you hear about this, you know, the different generations. And leading the younger generations, I think, is different than what it was leading me as I was going up. So learning, you know, different ways to motivate people and doing what you can to help them succeed is different, I think. But I believe at the end of the day, the characteristics are very similar.
Got it. What are the key things for you that makes a casino successful, and how do you instill that in your team in terms of that philosophy?
So one of the things here in Rochester, there's three casinos that are within about 30, 35 miles of one another. And so there is some competition in this somewhat rural location. And for us, what we really believe that we do well and what distinguishes and that I think is what makes casinos successful is really focusing on the guest service and the guest experience. Here we tend to have a culture that's like a family atmosphere and this feeling of belonging. And I feel, just talking now in my role, I do talk to a lot of our guests, and I have many of them that give us a lot of positive comment cards and that talk to me about how our service is so much better than the others, and that they feel like they're going home, like this is their second home. I had a guest actually tell me that, you know, this is his second home, his home away from home, and that he really feels appreciated and has a lot of fun when he comes here. And I think it's also, though, another component is to have a clean and very safe environment for the guests, because nobody's going to feel at home if it's not clean or safe. But
yeah, that's all important. Tell us a little bit about transitioning into your role. How was that for you? Was it harder than you thought?
Yeah, you know, I would say it is harder than I thought. I think that I thought it was going to be somewhat easy just because I had been with the organization for so long. I was CFO for 14 years, so I had all of this history related to the property. I had some relationships with tribal members and the business committee. But what was, I think, a little bit challenging is the significant change in how my time was spent. In fact, you know, this new role is much more people-oriented than the CFO role. Especially, you know, because team members, you know, I have about 700 team members that are relying on me, you know, to have a great work life for them. So that level of responsibility, I always felt it as a CFO from a fiduciary and financial responsibility, but now it's even a larger sense of responsibility, you know, because I have these team members depending on us. I have the guests depending on us, and then also, you know, the tribe, and sometimes there can be politics. I'm really fortunate that our tribe is wonderful to work with, but, you know, politics come at play, whether it's a corporation, family-owned business, or tribe.
That's great. And tell us a little bit about your views on the casino business right now, where we are and where we're headed, you know, in the next 5, 10, 15? You know, what is your views on that?
Yeah, so because I'm in the Washington State market, our market, I think one challenge that we have that may not be quite as inherent in some of the other markets is our regulatory challenges. And just from the standpoint that we have the video lottery terminals as opposed to the standalone slot machine. We also have regulators that has its own gaming labs as opposed to using like GLI when things are introduced. So for us here, a lot of times when hot new game slot machine themes come out in Vegas, you know, we're usually 3 years, 4 years beyond that and being able to get some of those to offer that product, which is frustrating for our guests because they go visit Vegas and they're like, have their favorite slot machine and why don't you have it?
Right.
I also think that one of the challenges, I think that there's just going to be increased competition. It's, you know, but I actually see that as a positive, not a negative. We just had a new casino open to our south where we didn't have any competition before. And it's been a little over a year now. And I think that just made us achieve at a higher level and become more efficient and more effective in what we do. So I think competition is good, but I see it just continue to boom. You know, with the sports betting that just is allowed in some other markets, we're probably 5 years out from that happening, but it still probably will eventually get here. Expansions, I know our property has gone through 3 expansions since it opened. And, you know, that's good for the tribe and good for the economy. It creates more jobs. One of the challenges I see for the gaming industry all surrounds technology. I think as an industry, we're kind of slower for technology to evolve than maybe other areas. You know, take the old slot machine. You mentioned it earlier when we were talking, you know, the pull handle kind. And, you know, other things were going paperless, but for a long time the industry was hesitant to leave those coins, and it ended up, you know, being just fine. But I think that we're just a little slower on the technology environment.
Why do you think that is?
You know, that's a really good question. Maybe because it's so much a cash business and, you know, being careful from that standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that the business has not proliferated to the point where it's become as competitive as, let's say, the retail business.
Absolutely. I know that's exactly true
right?
for us in Washington. For the longest time, you know, we only had 2 major slot vendors, and it's starting to open up now where we have 6, but for many years there was just 2 in our market.
Right, and that changes the dynamics completely, because usually when you go into business, you have a competitive marketplace, so you're going into the business already with the competition there, without being able to establish a baseline of business or a bank full of cash. So it's a major major difference. All right, should we take some phone calls?
Sure.
Hello, this is Tina Magdana. I have Lisa Miles on the phone. You have a question for him?
Oh, aloha, Tina and Lisa. This is Michael Kahanui. How's it going?
Good. How are you,
Good.
Michael?
Good.
Glad to hear it. You know, Lisa, it's phenomenal to hear, you know, such a long history with the property and that career growth that you've achieved. So kudos to you off the bat.
Thank you.
But because you've had that experience and you've grown with your property, you know, what are some of the the tricks of the trade or the rules of thumb that you've developed that work best for your property? Now, I know they don't apply to everywhere, but that have just seemed to have, over the years, you know, that these particular types of things always work for you and help your team, you know, gain success.
Yeah, well, I would say I have had most of my career here, that's true, but I had worked a couple other areas as well. But I think for here at the Lucky Eagle, I think it's just knowing who we are. You know, sometimes properties try to be something that they don't know what their guests want or something that they want to be that's not really fitting into their environment. Right now, today, we're really not a resort property. we're more, like if you looked at Vegas, you know, we're more the off-the-strip type property, maybe downtown. And I think appreciating what you are and what you do have to offer as opposed to trying to be something that you're not.
I mean, it's so true, right? So, you know, really, who are we? Who do we want to be and how can we get there, right?
Right.
Or keep that and not isolate our guests. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, well stated. You know, we've all had kind of bumps in the road or challenges. Can you think of a challenge that you've had in your career and where, what you've been able to do to kind of overcome that and kind of now incorporate that as part of your toolkit?
Well, of course, we always have challenges of some sort, right? I think, you know, this was probably more when I was from a CFO standpoint, but there, I think that because that is my background, integrity is just so important to me. And, you know, I really took that fiduciary responsibility seriously. And there was a situation that, you know, I really had to step aside and I had to report from a regulatory standpoint something. And I think it wasn't the easy road. It was very challenging and very difficult, but I ended up definitely coming out on top, and I believe it was the right road to go, because I think if you feel that something is going on that could potentially be unethical, it's important to report that.
You know, again, well stated. You know, sometimes you just got to head first and head on and meet those challenges. So, you know, that's, you know, tremendous to talk about your own integrity there. Tito does such a great job at talking about the star stories and, you know, how did we all come up in this industry? How do you recognize talent in your company? And then
mm-hmm.
what's your process for grooming? Is there a formal process for grooming, or is it more kind of a, you know, ad hoc flow with, you know, each individual?
Right. Well, because of our rural location, we're actually halfway between Seattle and Portland, so it's about 90 miles from the two major cities. So it's actually a challenge, especially for, like, professional or technical positions, from a recruitment standpoint and where the people are located and whether or not they're really willing to commute this far. So we really have had to learn and embrace and kind of help people move up within and try to, you know, if we hire for the right attitude and aptitude, we can teach them the skills that are necessary. That's not true in every position, but that is true in many of the positions. And so one of our success stories is one of our tribal members, and he started out as a dishwasher, and he went to culinary school and worked his way up, you know, for line cook one, line cook two, all the way up, and he's now our culinary director. And so we have a more formal program for tribal members. You know, that's part of the reason why we're in business. But the secondary piece of that, we have done some internal leadership development training on house. So we have a trainer on staff that has done leadership training and things like that to try to help people develop the skills that are needed to be successful.
That's great.
Great
job.
Yeah, I'd say well stated. One more, if you don't mind. You mentioned you had a great relationship and opportunity for your mentor from Bally's and kind of followed him along in your career. You know, I think we've all had those special people in our careers. Can you share a little nugget of knowledge that you learned that you still cherish today, that, you know, you kind of continued to be reminded of that individual because you profess that particular item or whatever it may be?
I have to think about that for a second. I think what I took away from him was just how he made me feel as far as a mentor and how he treated me and, you know, really respected me, even though I didn't even have an ounce of the same knowledge level that he was. He was just an incredibly bright, brilliant man. And so sitting in on some of the meetings where he was talking different accounting methodology and revenue recognition and those sorts of things. I just learned so much just by listening to how he, you know, saw things and his interpretation, and learning that sometimes there's not only one way to do things, and, you know, being open-minded, that not being stuck in a box, and really looking at all sides. So there was a lot that he taught me, but I really just appreciated the fact that he trusted me enough to work with me and, you know, consistently giving me the opportunities that I had.
Well, that's obviously a great thing to pass along, and certainly looking at all sides of the situation help us, you know, try to make the best decisions as we can in that moment. So, well said. Thank you for your time. I just wanted to call in and love the show, Tino, obviously, and great job.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. Talk to
thank
you soon.
You.
Hey, you guys have a good one. Aloha.
Bye-bye. Great questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa Miles. You have a question for her?
Yeah, hello. This is Ben. How are you?
Good.
Hi.
Ben, how are you?
Hey, Lisa, nice to meet you. Ben Keller here. I obviously enjoyed listening to you. You mentioned, you know, throughout the conversation, guest experience, right, and how the property really prides itself on guest experience. Obviously, when you think about guest experience, Lisa, when I do, I think about the casino floor. I saw an article recently that was MGM announced kind of taking the guest experience to things like, you know, a mobile app, mobile check-in. I think I saw some people launch, you know, in-room tablets, et cetera. What value does your property put on non-gaming versus the traditional hotel? And then do you think of it as one, as we're starting to see in other markets, or is gaming kind of obviously the bread and butter and everything else is ancillary?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting because we've had those talks at our executive table quite often. I think that for us, given our rural location and knowing our guests, you know, the attributes of our guests, I think that the food and dining and the hotel really truly are amenities. If we were in a more urban environment, I think that we might see things differently. But being the rural location that we are, gaming really kind of is our bread and butter. But it's also important to offer the non-gaming amenities that people find important in order to, you know, have them choose. You don't want to be without any amenities because there's other choices. So making sure you're competitive with the amenities that you offer.
Great. Yeah, fantastic. And obviously enjoyed hearing your story about kind of starting from the bottom. We've all been there. I think most of us, you know, doing the boss's expenses, taking out the recycling. I've started there as well. So obviously nice to hear, and great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Okay. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa Miles. Do you have a question for her?
Good evening, Tina and Lisa. This is Heidi and Tizana. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Very well. Thank you. Lisa, thank you. I love your story and your being a FIP at Ernst & Young. I used to train all the FIPs at Ernst & Young, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, awesome.
So, you know, one of the latest buzzwords in the last 2 years is the future is female. And unfortunately, if you look at the stats, it doesn't yet show it. And women's board membership, USA, is still at 19% compared to a country like Norway, which is at 35%. So what do you think women need to do differently to ensure they get a seat at the table, especially in Indian gaming?
Yeah, well, you know, Indian gaming is interesting because actually a lot of the, in particular, you know, a lot of tribes, females oftentimes are, you know, looked up to very respectfully. And, you know, there's been female tribal chairpersons in several of the tribes. It's, you know, it's a tough one. I know that I sit on Boys and Girls Club Board of Directors, and I'm also on a hospital Board of Trustees, and also sit on a funds development committee for the Evergreen College. And so I'm finding actually several board of directors outside of gaming that it's actually a lot more women at that at those board tables now, which is really nice to see. I think that the important thing is just to be involved. Sometimes I think women get so, you know, involved with their family and their personal lives that they're not as active. You know, and it, you look back many years, women stayed at home and, you know, men were the ones that brought home the income. And so I think it's, I do think it's evolving in the United States. And I think it's important that women really show that there can be a work and a life balance and that they have a lot to offer to all kinds of industries.
Right. My next question is about what do you feel, what have you seen in your 16 years of being in this business that are maybe the top two or the top three female executive blunders that you've seen women do that you're thinking, oh my goodness, that's just a no-no?
Well, I think some of the you know, I think sometimes, and I don't know that I've really seen this at the top, but one of the reasons that keeps people from moving up can oftentimes be kind of the gossiping and that sort of thing, you know, the office gossip and getting around and not focusing on the job as opposed to the people. So I think that that's something, and again, that is somewhat stereotypical. So I think working around those stereotypes. I would also say I've seen this can be a positive or a negative, but not setting up too many boundaries, but also establishing boundaries. Not having any
right.
is a negative thing, and having too many
right.
is a negative thing and can hinder.
Absolutely. And one last question, and it's one of my favorites always, is knowing what you do today, Lisa, what would you do differently if you had to start in Indian gaming right from the beginning?
Wow, that's a tough one. I don't know that I would really do anything differently. I think that, truthfully, you know, every experience is a learning experience. And I think, you know, mistakes, I've learned from those. So I don't really see that as a true mistake. And I think that where I'm at today actually was my journey that I was supposed to take.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and thank you, Tina. And Tino.
Thank
Tina.
You so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
My
Have
sister.
A good evening.
Thank you so much, Zadie. Have a good evening. That's great, great questions. Yeah, I mean, with your the path that you went on was pretty, you had some really great education growing up. You wouldn't have been able to get where you got if you didn't have that trajectory. That's what you're saying,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, no, I feel really blessed with what, you know, I think that I've earned my opportunities and worked hard for them.
Yeah.
So I think I've had a role in it, but I also have been fortunate to be blessed with some great opportunities too.
Yeah. This is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa Miles. Do you have a question for her?
Hey,
how are you?
Jacques Romero out here.
How are you, Jacques?
Hey, great. Hey, great call, guys. Great story, Lisa. Congrats on all your success personally and at your property. Loved hearing everything.
Thank you.
So at your property, with all the years of history that you have at your property, what are some of your proudest achievements? I know you said you went to something like 300 to 700 members. Is it one of the, you know, most things you're happy with is the growth at the property and things of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, well, recently I will say one of my proudest achievements that I think I came in this new role as the CEO about 2 years ago, and we have done, I think, quite a bit. And one of the things we did was we found it was time to kind of change our mission, vision, and values. So we came up with a new vision statement, a new mission statement, and re-outlined our core values and our service values as a company. And I think that was something that I think because it was kind of like my baby, you know, it was creating something from scratch. And I felt what we ended up with really represented who we are as an organization. So I think that actually is one of the proudest things to be proud of. I also think coming up and having the history that I have and playing a role in the CFO, you know, just being involved and having a role with the financial success of that went along with growing from a 300-person property to a 700-person property.
Right, great. And, yeah, from your CFO role to CEO, I know there's overlap, but as you mentioned a little bit on, one is more managing numbers and one is more probably managing people. And,
yes.
You know, I won't put you on the spot on which one you'd rather, but I know each has their own characteristics and challenges.
Absolutely. That is true.
Well, hey, continue.
Did you have another question? Did you have another question, Jack?
No, great. Continued great wishes. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You have a good night. Get some great questions. Let's see what we got
here.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa Miles on the phone.
Hi, Tino. Good evening. This is Oz from Gambling in Florida, Gambling America.
You?
I'm very well. How are you? You good?
Good, good, good.
Excellent. Hi, Lisa. Nice to hear you on GT Radio and some excellent insights. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
You've had a lot of great questions put to you and the discussions with Tino as well. I wanted to ask you in relation to where you spoke about hiring with the right attitude and aptitude for specific roles. From the point of view where here in Vegas, as you say, very different culture to where you are and the type of casinos that are run there, more, as you said, kind of the downtown feel compared to the resorts. But when you looked at the industry, the higher level, the executive level, when Gary Loveman came in as CEO, non-industry executive, so not grassroots, but quite brilliant in terms of vision and ideas. And you can see that there is a trend and a pattern that is existing now in Vegas where executives are being hired into key roles based on having, let's say, MBA experiences and coming in that route rather than necessarily industry and grassroots, the way in which you've experienced and come through the ranks to lead the casino as the CEO. I'm just fascinated to understand what your view is on that and the pros and the cons of those kind of strategies to bring in individuals, obviously, that are academic and are talented, but they don't have the industry culture.
Right. You know, culture is extremely important because I can tell you that what I have found being here is that individuals that grew up in, you know, or have been employed significantly at that corporate level tend not to work well in our culture because we really are kind of like a family-owned business and it's not as rigid. I mean, we still have regulatory things that we follow, and so there is the regulation piece of it. But as far as just from an HR standpoint, you know, there's a little more gray than maybe in a more corporate black and white world. But I will say that, you know, we've had a little bit of turnover at the top. It was many, many years before there was any turnover. And so we obviously look to hire. I want to hire the best people that I can to the standpoint so that there's different views and different ideas of how to do things instead of just the one way. And so we do at the higher executive levels, we use recruiters like many other people would. Oftentimes, and look to see so that we can try to get the most talented. There are certain things, though, you know, when you're in a tribal environment, that one of the goals is to promote tribal members to success. So we do have a couple positions with that, but absolutely it needs to be a well-rounded team for the greatest success for the property and for the tribe.
Excellent. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. It was just interesting to get that. And I did consider it to be from that viewpoint as tribal. Again, it is much more about, you know, embracing and bringing through the team and the individuals that are there, particularly the story you mentioned with regards to the individual from the culinary point of view, to leading there. That's very inspirational as well. And just one other thing, because I was fascinated by it, and I really didn't form a question behind it, but you spoke about the challenge to casinos and technology, and I really agree with that. I've only been here doing my job in the capacity I am now for about 8 months. Before that, I was based in London, and a lot of the European clients that I looked after and represented are the online businesses and suppliers that provide to the online casinos, and the technology is obviously moving at such a rapid pace there. Do you think, and again, I understand the culture is different with tribal casinos in that regard, but do you think there's opportunities to learn from the online model that could have some impact and transference into helping technology advance in the land-based?
You know, I would hope so. It'll be really interesting to see how that role plays out, though, you know, especially like the different generations. So a lot of the online, you know, I've just been dabbling. I don't know enough to talk real educated on it, but looking into esports a little bit, right, and some of that gaming type of activity, because, you know, the fact is that our property tends to have a higher age person as our average guest, right, and who our patron is. And, you know, at some point we have to get some new blood and finding it, the amenities and the thing that attract to several generations. And so I think there's a lot to look at and try to understand, and I wouldn't close the door to looking at anything. I think online is one aspect, and, you know, looking at these esports and different things and just seeing what we can bring that will work for different types of gamers.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate your time. It's great to speak to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
All right.
Great stuff. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa Miles. Do you have a question for her?
Yes, I do. Could you describe your biggest challenge in your role to date, and how did you overcome it? My name's Victor, by the way. Sorry about that.
Hey, Victor.
Hi, Victor. I would say the biggest challenge that I've kind of faced is it can be really an advantage and it can be a disadvantage when you've been at a property for so long. So the advantage is all the history that I brought to the table, and kind of knowing some of the obstacles we had been faced and challenges and what worked and what didn't. And so that is a great opportunity from that perspective. But there's also a challenge associated with it, because with history, you know, then there's a lot of perceptions and things that people have. And as you move up, I think people tend to be a little more critical. And so I was a little surprised that, you know, I guess I thought day one when I became the CEO that everyone that I was on, you know, equal with on the executive team would all be, you know, excited and happy. And there was, you know, initially there was that, and then it kind of backed up a little bit, and really working through those relationships and people understanding instead of their equal, I was their boss. And I think both of us understanding that new relationship was a challenge. And, you know, I'm really glad that I have a great working relationship with everybody and we got there, but there was a little bit of a challenge. It's hard when you're somebody's equal and then all of a sudden now you're their boss from both perspectives.
Yeah. Interesting.
I've got another question.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
What I was wondering, based on what you were saying about this new relationship and everything else, how do you manage to balance, like, your personal life, your career, especially in a 24-hour business like gaming?
Yes. Well, I think I said earlier I'm not very successful at that. Unfortunately, my work life has been a large aspect, and I probably spend way too much time on it. So I'm still trying to work that balance out and setting those boundaries. But I love what I do, and so it doesn't really seem like work. I really enjoy it. I enjoy the people that I work with. I really enjoy working for the Chehalis tribe. They've been wonderful. So, you know, they say if you love what you do, it's not really work, and I think there's some truth to that.
So, Lisa, if I'm hearing you correctly, that's basically a personal choice, right?
Yes,
it's definitely a personal choice.
It's okay
to dedicate yourself to your work and have your work be your family. I mean, it's been successful for you. People shouldn't stress about it, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It is a choice. And I do take time for me. I mean, one of my places, Mazatlan, Mexico is one of my happy places. And the last few years, I've gone there for a couple of weeks, and I'm like doing a cruise later this year. So I do take time for personal, and I do make time for my friends and my family that are very important to me. So
I just wanted to thank you for your answer. Thank you. And, really appreciate the opportunity to ask these questions and to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Victor. Have a great night. Okay. Some great questions.
Mm-hmm.
People are very interested in everything that's going on. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Lisa on the phone. Do you have a question for her? Don't hear anything. Hello, hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, there you go.
Yes, we can now.
Okay, great. Great show, guys. Love it.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, the question is, Lisa, do you think the Washington market is for gaming is going to be oversaturated? What does it mean for your survival?
You mean oversaturated just from the competitors?
Yeah, competitors, you were mentioning there's a number of casinos there in the market, you know.
Yeah. You know, I still stand by the fact that I think competition is good. I think it makes a property better and a little more focused. Mm-hmm. So, and I really don't fear of it getting oversaturated, at least not in the somewhat near term, like in the next 10 years or so. I think I've talked to several, actually, CFOs or CEOs in our market, and, you know, when other properties opened, they were able to not really feel the huge impact, and I can say that that was true for us when the property down south opened. It was not near doom and gloom like people thought it would be. We did actually fared relatively well, and I've heard that story from many of the properties in the area. So I think as long as you plan for it and you're strategic and you stay true to who you are as a property and deliver the product that, you know, you intend, I think that there is room.
Perfect. Am I able to ask another question?
Sure.
I think we have time for one more.
Yeah. How do you pay it forward in mentoring others?
Yeah, you know, I think that I just try to emulate how my mentor was with me, and I very much have an open door policy. I try to work very hard at letting the group here know that, you know, I'm approachable. I do quarterly CEO roundtables that are just informal so that people can come talk and hopefully feel more comfortable. I certainly make myself available. I've had team members, you know, call me at 8 o'clock at night that just needed some guidance, and they know that they can call me at any time. This job is after 5 p.m. And so just making sure that I'm there. I also, you know, when the relationship feels right and I feel that people want to hear some advice, I will definitely give some ideas on, you know, career paths for them. And then most importantly, supporting people and just giving them the opportunities to show that they can shine and believing in them. I mean, we have a lot of great, great team members here, and my executive team is absolutely wonderful to work with, and, you know, we have a lot of fun together, and I think the open door policy, though, is and being approachable has a lot to do with it.
Access, right, Lisa?
Access, definitely. And that was one thing that the partner that, you know, was my mentor, he, you know, even though he was a partner, he never made me feel little by being what we called FIPs, you know, first-year people. And, you know, he always made me feel comfortable. No question was a stupid question. And I try to definitely do that every day when I'm walking the floor and out there with the team.
That's great.
Great. Thanks a lot. Thanks for letting me being on. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks so much. Have a great night. Lisa, it's been an incredible interview. I thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah.
And,
thank you. I appreciate it.
I look forward to having you back. So maybe in a few months we can have you back on the show. It's been really fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
We'll talk soon. Have a great evening.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
What a great interview. She's absolutely fantastic, very knowledgeable, very articulate, and she's just great. I love her. We are going to be off next week. We're going to be at the GM Exchange and the Marketing Exchange at Talking Stick. And if whoever's listening, if you're going to be there, we'll be around. Look us up. Run into us, talk to us, and remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good evening.
Question of your life. The only question before that question. How do you find the perfect ring to ask it with? With the incredible selection of diamonds at Jared and our price match guarantee, you can dare to stop searching and find the perfect diamond at a price you'll love. Visit your local Jared store today and dare to be devoted.
We promise to match any price on a like loose certified diamond of the same quality from any other jewelry retailer. See jared.com/pricematch for details.